Then I have the outline, and then at the end of the outline, I have what I call the implementation. In counseling phraseology, it's homework. But you don't put that on a sermon because people will never go home and do it. So I make it sophisticated and academic, and I say, this is the implementation. And I want to tell you, it's really thrilling to me how my people respond to that. Sunday a week ago, I did a sermon on 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 1 to 5. And talked about the fact of what Peter's going to address people here who are being persecuted. And he starts out by looking at our salvation. He takes a eternity past look at it, an eternity present look at it, and an eternity future look at it. Well, across my desk that week came that letter from Wycliffe regarding Ray, who had been kidnapped here some time ago. And so I excerpt that letter, and I put it on the back side of the insert with my sermon outline on it. And I asked the people to sit down, to read Ray the letter about Ray and his kidnapping and the situation in which he was in, and then to compose a letter to Ray to encourage him based on the sermon and the text for that week. And then to pray for Ray during the week that he would be able to think about and the Spirit of God would bring these things to his mind, that they would be an encouragement to him. Well, I want to tell you, three of my folks that week called me to see if they could actually write to him or his wife the letter they had written. Now, that's really an encouragement to me. But that came out of my years of sitting behind that desk and working with people in homework and knowing I've got to get a way to get it off of the page and into the life, or otherwise it bounces around the room. And too often, that's what happens in a counseling session in Christian offices. It bounces around the room. It sounds great, but it doesn't get from the page to the life. And we have to help people get it there, and we have to hold them responsible to get it there. Secondly, under methodology, it needs to be biblical. It needs to be biblical. Data gathering. And again, I want to call your attention to some passages of Scripture, going back to the book of Proverbs, and chapter 18. You can listen and just jot them down. Proverbs 18 in verse 2. A fool does not delight in understanding, but only in revealing his own mind. Unfortunately, sometimes Christians counsel that way. They're not that interested in understanding. They're that interested in telling you what they know that can help you. And you have to gather data or you can't help somebody. Proverbs 18:13. He who gives an answer before he hears, it is folly and shame to him. Again, underlines the importance of gathering data. And then 18:15 of Proverbs. The mind of the prudent acquires knowledge, and the ear of the wise seeks knowledge. In verse 17, the first to plead his case, this is an important one, the first to plead his case seems just. Oh, is that one important for marriage counsel? I want to tell you, husband or wife, either one can then start presenting their case. I'll tell you, it doesn't take long before your heart starts bleeding for them. And then you get the other one in the next time, and you say, wait a minute, is this the person that's married to the person I talked to last week? I mean, you talk about divergence, and what you have is two very different perspectives on the same behaviors. Two very different perspectives on what's going on. I remember one time, a gray, big, burly truck driver. Guy was probably 6'2", 6'3", and probably weighed 290. His wife was about 5'6", and probably weighed 110. And they were maybe their mid-40s. And she had been in the week before and painted this picture of this situation. And they came back the next week, and she told Dr. Adams that he had hit her. Adams looked at him and he said, is that true? As big as you are and as little as she is, and you being a man and she's a woman, you hit her? And the guy said, well, she was screaming hysterically, and I slapped her face to get her to quiet down so I could talk to her. Now, that was very different than what she reported. What she had reported is he had beat her. Now, maybe he shouldn't have slapped her face, but it was, you know, he said slap her face. He meant like you would in an emergency room and somebody's out of control, just to try to get their attention. Very different from one than the other. Now, that's the absurd kind of illustration. You will get that same kind of thing where a person presents an image of themselves and how good a husband or wife they are and how hard they've tried to be the right kind of husband and wife, and on and on and on and on. And you begin to sit there and say to yourself, what can I help this person with? I mean, they're probably more sanctified than I am. And then you get the other mate in. And he's, I see. This person has a different camera than this one does. The first to plead his case seems just until another comes and examines him. Now, there's ways to determine to some extent whether or not the presentation you're getting from one has some accuracy or not. There are some ways to do that. This isn't the place to discuss it. That comes up in marriage counseling. But there are some ways to do that. Question. Oh, okay. Okay. Well, they don't always tell the truth. But a lot of times I find it's not so much they don't tell the truth. They tell the truth as they see it. And that sometimes needs somebody else, as this text says, to examine it so they can begin to see the truth for what it is. Okay? 1 Thessalonians chapter 3. Therefore, we can endure it no longer. We thought it best to be left behind at Athens alone, and we sent Timothy, our brother and God's fellow worker in the gospel of Christ, to strengthen and encourage you as your faith, so that no man may be disturbed by these afflictions. For you yourselves know what we have been destined for this. For indeed, when we were with you, we kept telling you in advance that we were going to suffer affliction, and so it came to pass, as you know. Paul's saying, let me tell you how this is occurring here, and let me tell you what I told you before, and the two things come together. And I sent Timothy so you might have a clearer picture of it. And one of the reasons I use that text is I want to show you that the principle we're working with is the same here as it is in a counseling situation. Over here in everyday life, if we don't examine the facts, if we don't have somebody else to collaborate it, somebody else to sort it out, take your textbooks. I have two different, very, very different men with very different styles at very different periods of history, almost 25 years apart, writing about what we're dealing with in the current milieu in which we live, because I want you to see it through two very different sets of eyes. Same principle. Now you bring it over in counseling, it's the same principle. You've got to gather that data, and you've got to gather it from different perspectives in order that you can really get a handle on what's happening here. Otherwise, you're going to be tightening the nuts on the front wheel, and it's the back wheel that's loose. And you might snap the studs in the front, and then they leave the place of repair, and the back wheel falls off because you've been working on the wrong problem. And then it's differential. That is, you have to sort out and differentiate the various dynamics that are going on in the problem and the various sets of responsibilities that are going on in the problem. One of the things that we deal with a lot today is something you don't find the verbiage for in the New Testament, in the Bible, as far as that goes. But we hear and we talk a lot about self-image, how we see ourselves. Well, when you're dealing with somebody who, quote-unquote, has a self-image problem, what are you dealing with? Well, number one, you're dealing with a self-perception. So then you have to ask yourself, from whence did they draw their perception? And what were the conditions of the people that were giving them those perceptions? And what behaviors go on in their own life or have gone on in their own life? Perhaps the behaviors in their life add up to they ought to have a bad self-image. And until they go back and deal with those issues in their lives and those behaviors properly, they're not going to do much about changing their self-perception. If a gal has been a prostitute, but she's never dealt with that behavior, she just puts on fresh clothing and takes a shower and combs her hair back and puts a nice smile on and doesn't hang around those people and doesn't do that anymore, how's she going to see herself? She hasn't dealt with it. See? Yes. Well, it just depends on how you're dealing with the problems of the past. It's one thing to resolve them. It's another thing to wait around in them. Your past is your present. until you have dealt with your past. Want me to repeat that? Your past is your present until you have dealt with your past. Well, what you do is you deal with what you do know. And then when something else comes to the surface, you deal with it. And then when something else comes to the surface, you deal with it. There, that's right. There are times when we don't deal with everything at one point simply because we don't know everything. We don't remember everything. We don't remember the associations. We don't remember things we were hooked into. But later on, they come to the surface. Then we deal with it.